Alrighty, let's rock this thing. 3, 2, 1. Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, April the 25th, 124th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon from the California Highway Patrol Arcata Division. Is that right? Command?
Yeah, we go
division
by...
Division or command?
Well, we're in Northern Division. We go by the name Humboldt Area, but we're CHP office in Arcata to the layperson.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like laying down, so we'll
it's
go with that
time
one.
Of afternoon.
Yeah. Chase Adams is alongside. This afternoon, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about, well, this month has been the anti-texting, pay attention moron month.
Distracted Drivers Awareness Month.
Distracted, okay, fine. You say it that way, I get the impression the other is probably more accurate.
It's all about the buzzwords.
Yeah. So we'll talk a little bit about how the month has been going along in that direction. Also, we'll get Chase's, there was the arrest earlier this week of the individual is claiming he was a member of a motorcycle gang. So we'll talk a little bit about some of that because certainly they're out there on the highways and
so
is Chase. So there's got to be some stories that are there. And we'll also kick around some other things undoubtedly when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Chase Adams. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from former First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt, kind of in honor of President Bush's gathering this afternoon.
Yeah, the library dedication.
Yeah. Quote, "You gain strength, courage, and confidence by every experience in which you really stop to look fear in the face. You must do the thing you cannot do."
Profound.
I would imagine that that would be kind of akin to you making your first arrest of a gang member, like a motorcycle gang member.
Brian, your transitions never cease to amaze me.
Yeah, semi-smooth, always semi-rocky.
It works. It works.
What was that like?
From being, well, I've mentioned before on the show that I broke in, industry term for, got my start in East Los Angeles. So living, growing up here on the North Coast in rural Humboldt County, it was kind of a culture shock. And, you know, you see all the movies and hear all the gang lore from down there. So it was a different experience for sure. We patrolled an area in East LA that where the Mongol Motorcycle Gang got their start, basically their charter membership house or clubhouse, whatever you want to call it, was down there. So you saw some of that traffic and then just general gang activity as well. But a lot of the people who readily admitted association were almost more polite and easier to deal with than some of the lesser known or gang or criminal activity with less affiliation. Some of those people were harder to deal with because some of the more well-known motorcycle gangs or any gang in general would be not wanting to flaunt that because they don't want to get in trouble with the structure of within their whichever gang they may be into. And this is speaking broad strokes, but in my experience, I definitely distinctly noticed that.
So your first one,
the first
sweaty palms on that one.
You know, I'm kind of one of these guys who doesn't know what he's getting into, so so it doesn't worry me until I think about it afterwards. So it wasn't overly nerve-wracking, and you know, any arrest, you're going to be, especially when you're brand new, you're going to be nervous and trying to make sure you cross all your I's and dot all your T's and don't look too bad in front of your supervising officer and your beat partners and everybody else. So that's probably where most of the nerves came from.
When there's a situation with someone that appears to be from one of these different entities,
mm-hmm.
do you approach them? Do you deal with them any differently? Do you deal with them with a different approach, say, because of that concern?
Well, you definitely, as far as your overall sense of awareness and basically officer safety techniques, you're going to want to be on so-called heightened alert, just because a lot of people fly their colors, so to speak, for intimidation reasons and territorial reasons and everything else. So people have reputations, and not speaking specifically, I mean, everybody's different. Those reputations may or may not be well-earned, so you kind of consider all that, but a main thing that we...
They're not known to be more dangerous necessarily than a regular traffic stop?
Well, that's one thing that we try not to fall into. We try not to fall into, as law enforcement officers and highway patrolmen, we try not to fall into complacency. I mean, you do something, it becomes so routine, making 10, 20, 30 traffic stops a day, that 27th one, when it feels it's just routine, that's the one that'll get you, whether it's traffic or criminal behavior in the vehicle or whatever the case may be. So it's just like being a equipment operator or any other job that is going to have some consequence to it, whether it's a occupational safety or whatever the case may be. You just have to keep kind of like driving a car. You never want to get too complacent. You always want to have some sense of hyper awareness and move on from there.
Nice attempt, though. Are motorcycle stops any more challenging than a four-wheel vehicle or some of the commercial rigs?
They can be. There's a different set of variables, I should say, when it comes into stopping a motorcycle. One would be, especially again speaking to LA in traffic, if you manage to get behind a high-speed motorcycle that's just been cutting its way through traffic, you know, reckless driving, high speeds, whatever the case may be, you definitely want to jot that plate down either in your mind or run it through dispatch or make sure you have it. So if they decide to keep going the way they're going, even though you have flashing lights and sirens behind them, they will, a lot of times if there is traffic, have much more escape routes than you will in your four-wheeled vehicle, and they can be in the wind.
So you guys will find them later on.
That's the plan.
Yeah, nice to know there is a plan.
Well, we try.
KINS, News and Information Time is 3:19. We'll recognize that smooth segue attempt when we return with Chase Harris.
Sounds good.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. For years, the Eel River was the state's second largest source of steelhead and third largest of salmon. A UC Davis study estimates it once produced more than 1 million fish annually. This has been replaced by unpredictability. Last year saw a good salmon run, but some years it is very small. Several causes are cited, but all agree the Eel River ecosystem has been degraded. Now a task force of volunteers has come together to pinpoint the reasons and work to restore the watershed. The Eel River Task Force consists of public agencies, Indian tribes, conservation organizations, and others committed to establishing a scientific baseline of the causes of the decline and what might be done to reverse it. The members agree, no finger-pointing. A plan of solutions must fulfill legal responsibilities to protect endangered species while also respecting private property rights. It will be a big job, but a healthy Eel River is worthwhile for all Humboldt County. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the betterment of our community.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 4:23. We're back to Talk Shop this very afternoon with Chase Adams, the Segway King.
Yeah. I recognize a good one when I hear it.
So how has the month of distracted driving gone? Have you been paying attention?
We have. This month I do a little bit extra, you know, keep my ear to the ground. I do informal traffic surveys. If you see a guy in a yellow vest standing on some street corner in an unincorporated area, it may be me.
A yellow vest?
Yeah, with a clipboard.
Oh.
Marking
looking
down.
Official.
Well, trying not to look too official. What I do is I go out there and I try and do informal traffic surveys, see what's going on as far as people on their cell phones, seatbelt violations, all that kind of thing.
And do you see a seatbelt standing there?
In the towns, yes, like Cutting Area, Myrtletown, McKinleyville, wherever the case may be. And usually I go somewhere where there's a stop sign, so traffic's slowing and I can actually look in.
Makes it easier.
Yeah.
So the guy wearing the yellow and the clipboard is not a peeping Tom.
That's why I brought it up.
Yeah, okay.
So people don't get creeped out.
But do you have your uniform on, or are you trying to be clandestine?
Well, I'm outside of enforcement mode, mostly.
Well, yeah, but I mean, would we recognize a CHP officer doing the work, or would it just look like
it would look more like
public works guy?
Probably more of the public works type of guy, and they do their own surveys as well. But we're just trying to gauge the number, the percentage of people who still are on their phone texting or voice calls with the phone in their hand, and it's still very high, very high. A lot of times. And everybody kind of know, I shouldn't say everybody, but people know they do it where they do what's called the cop drop. And they see black and white coming their way, or they're catching up to us. And they do, let me call you back, drop the phone or set it down, whatever the case may be. So a lot of times the violations are happening, but because people are aware, we may not see it. But
I had a buddy, this was years ago now, in San Diego. He's from Ohio. And he was doing that, and he made the comment, particularly at nighttime, there's no way to hide it. I mean, the whole cabin is lit up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially with the big flip phones that used to put out.
Yeah, like it's kind of like
500 lumens.
Yeah.
3 million candle power. Yeah.
Yeah, just light the way for the rig.
I'm sorry, sir, my headlight's out, but I use my cell phone in lieu of.
Yeah. I was driving blinded.
Oh. Technology's come a far way.
So what were the numbers?
Generally, like I said, it's statewide. It seems pretty consistent, and we're not the only agency doing it. Agents or workers for NHTSA, which is the National Highway and Transportation Safety Administration, and other state and county agencies, as well as local PDs, do surveys, and it stays pretty consistent in the mid to high 90 of compliance. So
yeah, 5% roughly.
So when you think about that, it seems low. If you could keep 95% of your paycheck, you'd be happy. To use an example that will kind of all hit home with everybody. However, in 100 cars that go by, if 5 people are texting or 5 people are on their cell phone. When you think of how quickly at some of these intersections, I mean, we're getting some intersections get 25,000 cars per day. So when you think out of every 100 cars that you pass by, statistically about 5% of those people are texting or on their phone, that's actually quite a high number. And it's almost lucky that we don't have more collisions.
So with the safety component that's there, universal don't.
Right.
Why is the fine only $159?
Well, one thing that you're going to be possibly unpleasantly surprised at when you go into court, if you are unfortunate enough to get a cell phone or a texting ticket, it's going to be significantly higher than the base fine of $159. Same with seatbelts. There were posted traffic signs a while back, and I think they've kind of gone away for the most part, but saying $89 for first offense with a seatbelt. And speaking from personal experience, and we're talking about youthful indiscretions here. When I first got my license, I may or may not have got a seatbelt ticket or two. But I went in there, and I remember those signs. So I'm thinking, whatever, it was $56 then. And it ended up being somewhere closer to $150 at that time. So that's the base fine that the court charges. And then there's processing fees, administration fees, all kinds of other fees. So a lot of times it's quite possibly close to double the base fine that people think they're going to be charged with, and ends up being a pretty hefty hit to your wallet.
Now, you said that 5% compliance roughly, or out of compliance rather, with the cell phone.
Generally speaking,
What about seatbelts?
Very similar. A little bit higher compliance, because especially with the new cars, even if you're morally opposed to wearing your seatbelt or whatever the case may be, the beeping and screeching and everything else, and flashing lights and bells going off, people put them on just because it's hard to ignore. And that's a great thing. You know, that's what we want to see. So we do see a little bit higher, but then there's the older cars or maybe commercial vehicles or delivery people who might be going down the block, short distance around town, and decide or just it may slip their mind to put their seatbelt on.
Well, do the delivery guys, I mean, I think in a metropolitan city where they really are going like almost a block to the next block.
Sure.
Does that void that?
There are some exceptions in the law. You have trash truck drivers, mailmen, and very few other exceptions. But for the most part, if you're rolling on the street, you got to wear the seatbelt.
It's 3:30.
Decade of Difference presents a brand new competition, Innovate, a business challenge opportunity to pitch your creative idea. First step, upload a 60 to 90 second elevator pitch highlighting your business venture idea by March 29th. 40 finalists will be selected to move on to phase two. But don't wait. First 100 entries receive a free iTunes gift card. To upload your video and get more information, visit decadeofdifference.org. A grand prize of up to $2,500 will be awarded. Don't wait. Innovate.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Public Information Officer Chase Adams out of the Arcata Division of the California Highway Patrol. Got all the words, got them in right, and I even pronounced the T's.
I like it.
Everyone must be happy now.
You really have to enunciate.
Yes. Even commanders and others who think they have any influence over me.
Yeah. You got to watch out for those guys.
Probably not, yeah. Situation down in Willits a little bit ago, some of the protesting and things like that. I know that the fire guys have got, they'll make a call out and all the fire folks will scramble and they'll be sending units and engines and whatnot for a particular fire.
Right, throughout the state.
Do you guys have anything similar to that with protest or arrest or even like reggae, where it's a big event, but the roadway really isn't designed to handle what those events bring?
Absolutely. If somebody's planning, if it's a planned event such as reggae, the county, before they issue permits for a large event like that, they'll require them to basically come up with a contract to include extra enforcement, and it would be on their dime to secure their event to request extra units. So that's a general operating procedure with a planned event. Now, if it's something like a protest, it really depends on the scale, how many bodies actually officers get allocated to that event, and
protester bodies, law enforcement bodies.
Correct, You know what? Let me rephrase that. Law enforcement officers, body. Again, an industry term. that being said, if we're talking something historical like early '90s Rodney King type of riot.
Oh, Redwood Summer up here. I mean, there was a lot of...
Yeah, during the height of the logging industry protests and whatnot. There can be statewide potentially federal, you know, sometimes the National Guard gets involved, and it kind of scales back from there. Usually if it's something on a slightly smaller scale with our department, it's usually usually officers from within the division, and there's several divisions throughout the state. We're in Northern Division, obviously, at the north end of the state. So generally,
we'd like to think so.
Yeah, we're not in Oregon yet. Well, not quite.
Could be the cookie cutter division.
Yeah, I was thinking.
So we got creative.
There you go. But we usually allocate bodies throughout. Again, there I go. Officers throughout the division, be it from Reading, be it from Ukiah or Humboldt area, Garberville, and if there's a call out requiring more than the local force of officers, you'll see basically a pooling of resources.
So with these protests, whether it's at Richardson's Grove or the ones where they had some of the tree sitters in Willits, did you guys get a chance to play ball, or were those not large enough events to warrant any kind of joint effort?
Play ball. Well, it is baseball season.
Well, and I said joint also. So
there you go.
Go either direction. Yeah.
What month is it again? Okay. Anyway, moving on. Yeah, in a situation like that, they usually request officers from Humboldt, and we did have some allocated down there to assist, as well as officers from Reading and some of the outlying areas that wouldn't otherwise have no reason to go down there other than for training or something of that nature. So they did, because of the scale of the operation, they have units from all over the division come down and assist, whether it's that protest or any other big event such as that.
So when you guys are doing a protest that's, I guess, significant enough to get your attention, but it's not hundreds or thousands of people spilling out all over the place.
Sure.
Traffic control or sightseeing control? I mean, what's the primary mission, if you will?
Well, obviously safety. Anytime there's vehicles on a highway and groups of people along the roadway, we want to just make sure everybody's obviously, you know, exercising their rights, but more importantly, people are out of the roadway, people are safe, nobody's getting run over, nobody's, you know, optimally traffic wouldn't be slowed or impeded, and we go from there. But the main goal is to keep everybody safe.
If we have a tough time, Chase, when people have tire blowouts on a highway of keeping traffic moving and keeping it safe, in a situation where people might get emotional,
mm-hmm.
might be wanting to have their voice heard or their signs seen on the highway.
Sure.
How aggressive do you guys get in keeping the motorist as safe as can be, as well as the protester?
Well, like I said, that's the main goal. And if it means creating a situation where we form a line to make sure that safety zone isn't breached, then that's a tactic that's used. Other than that, it's a case specific situation, you know, depending on the number of protesters, the number of demonstrators, whatever the case may be, and we adjust our operation accordingly.
I know you love me using fireman analogies.
Hey, you know what? I wish I could have been a fireman.
Oh, really?
No, I'm just kidding. We call them the real heroes out there.
Yeah. The incident command.
Sure.
Folks.
And that's the same term.
The equivalent.
Absolutely.
There's somebody who's in charge that comes in and designates.
More or less, generally, yeah. You like my
that would be
ambiguous terms?
Technical term, yes. More or less generally. Good. Good.
Again,
I'll have to remember that one for next month.
Again, it all depends on the size and the scale of the operation.
Yeah, it always does, doesn't it? KINS, News and Information Time, 3:42. We'll be back with more from Chase Adams.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass, and on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass, and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:45. We're back Talking Shop this afternoon with Chase Adams. Chase, the situation with a cop that was killed in Boston, the MIT fellow.
Sure.
When something like that happens, do you, do your fellow officers get a wake-up call? Go, okay. As you talked about with one of the motorcycle scenarios, you approach, if it's a traffic violation, a little bit differently.
Sure.
Well, is that kind of the one redeeming thing out of this situation, is that perhaps the next guy will be paying attention and won't suffer the same fate?
That definitely is. And, you know, unfortunately, the people involved in these casualty incidents don't have a voice to say, oh, okay, I did this, I would have done this differently or anything like that. But the technology is such now that we can, I don't want to say Monday morning quarterback it, but we can say, and this is absolutely not speaking towards the MIT officer who lost his life, but in general incidents where we can say, okay, maybe we shouldn't stand there in relation to a traffic stop, or maybe we should do this differently or that differently, where we can change our tactics and streamline things, change our policies if it requires, that we can not only learn from past incidents, but improve on the
protocols and procedures.
Protocol, yeah, the way we do business. And
you're really worried about somebody making a text to you, aren't you?
I'm just a real popular guy.
Yeah.
Back to the point at hand. Just the law enforcement as a whole, same as any industry, with more attention and scrutiny being paid towards occupational safety. Even, you know, we talked about firefighters. I'm sure the way that a fire would be contained in the 1970s is completely different as it would be now with technology, technological improvements, equipment, and resources. Same thing with policing. So anytime there is a casualty incident, obviously it's heartbreaking to the law enforcement community as a whole and the public as a whole. I know I've lost several people who are my buddies on this job, and I've definitely, it's almost their legacy becomes what can I learn from how they did and apply it, and their loved ones will say the same thing almost unequivocally. Across the board, they'll say, you know, learn from it, even if they couldn't have done anything differently, if they did everything, you know, dotted their T's, crossed their I's, like we talked about earlier, and did everything right, but still bad things happen. So there, I've had mothers and wives and stuff say, not only to me personally, but to our department and law enforcement community as a whole, you know, make sure you take this to heart, what happened to my loved one, and learn from it, use it moving forward. So that's one thing that we definitely rely upon as a community and we look for.
With the situation that happened in Boston, are there lessons for the North Coast, or was it just so weirdly unique that it
was? But it's something that that, you know, as a law enforcement community and as a community in general, that it's in times like these, you have to be hyper vigilant. As far as the Highway Patrol, we do have procedures in place for reacting to any kind of explosive scare or suspicious package. And we, as a department, we have our procedures and guidelines and throughout the state. And that's what we rely on. And we do have a plan in place.
Thanks for coming by.
My pleasure.
Say hi to the new old boss.
I will do that.
And the old new boss.
And we'll see if in the coming months we can't
get one or two of them here.
Let's do it.
All righty, man. We've been Talking Shop this afternoon with Chase Adams. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day. Hug somebody else. See you tomorrow.